This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 219 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com. And joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again, Mr. Glyn Lavender.
Hi-ho.
Shall I assume that you are excellent?
Look, I've got to tell you, it's not all about me, mate. It's, how are you? No, really. Yeah. Every week it's me. I'm always. How are you doing,
mate? I'm still recovering from our weekend away.
Did you do a little something fun? Did you?
Oh, mate, we had so much fun. It was fantastic. It really was. So the whole scope of the Trundle weekend shrank a lot from the original expectation.
Yeah.
Because originally there was, you know, supposedly about 10 photographers coming. That shrunk down to myself and three others. as a consequence, which kind of worked out as a bit of a blessing because it meant that with so few people, I didn't need to hire a minibus. We were able to just carpool in two cars and drive ourselves out there. So that reduced the cost of putting the event on, which meant that the, you know, everyone who was attending actually got to pay less.
Yeah.
Which kind of sounds counterintuitive, because normally, you know, the more people you've got, the less everyone has to pay, you know, but the cost of the bus hire was like such a massive chunk.
Yeah, if that's 70% of your budget taken away straight away.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So as a consequence, Lee Gatland and David Schofield, they actually went out Friday afternoon. Jaden, whose folks owned the property, he went out midweek, like Wednesday or something. And the only reason I couldn't go Friday afternoon was because Tegan, our model, had to work Friday night. And
how inconsiderate.
Yeah.
I mean, really, come on.
So I'd said to her, well, look, you know, I need you here at my place at like 7 o'clock on Saturday morning. And you can go back to sleep in the car if you need to. And she
should have got there at 3. Should have picked her up straight from work and kept on driving.
Yeah. So we headed out Saturday morning. Lee and David went out to Parks Friday afternoon, and they did some like star trails and star field type shots with the dish.
Nice.
As the foreground interests. So they got some really nice stuff out of that. I was a little bit jealous of that, actually.
I hate it when people do that to me.
As for us, we got out to the farm about 1 o'clock Saturday afternoon. So it's about a 6-hour drive to get out there. The makeup artist was already at the farm, and she was actually related. She was Jaden's auntie.
Okay.
And so she stayed at the farm Saturday night. So as soon as we got there, 1 o'clock Saturday Ave, I got her and Tegan sat down and said, you know, give you an hour and a half to do hair and makeup.
Can I just give you one tip about models?
Yeah.
Because I've seen the photos you took on the weekend, and I've seen your model.
Yeah.
Next time, get one that's kind of, good looking and curvy, because that one, she was just, she was just gorgeous and amazing looking and incredible physique and stuff. You're just making it too easy on yourself. I mean, you get someone that good looking in front of the camera, you know, it's kind of hard to go too far wrong.
it's a tough life, but anyway. So we
hair and makeup.
Got them sat down to do hair and makeup while myself, Lee and David headed into town to organise the accommodation at the pub. So we got that all sorted out. We headed back out to the farm, 2:30, ready to start shooting. So we headed off down to the wool shed and the shearing shed, and we shot there for about 3 hours until we could see that the, you know, sort of golden hour was starting to kick in. And then we went outside and did some portraiture near this old harvester, this, I don't know, 60, 70-year-old harvester that's just sitting in the paddock rusting away.
And then we
headed back to the farmhouse, had some dinner, and things got a little bit too cozy with the red wine, and there was only myself, David, and Lee who decided to go and do any more shooting that evening. I gave Tegan the night off because I knew she was going to have an early start the next morning, so I said, well, you know, I'll take you back to the pub, get an early night. I went back out to the farm. We went off and did some of the, you know, the burning steel wool thing.
Oh, yeah.
Which everyone seems to have done except me, so... the only problem was I didn't actually get to take any photos of it because I was the guy spinning the steel wool, so...
Why did it always fall on you to be the spinner?
I don't know. I probably should have said, hey, do you guys want to have a go? And I don't know, I just didn't think of it. Because we were working on the technique and trying to get it right.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just one of those things, you know. So anyway.
Whenever I get volunteered, you know, in parentheses, yep. Volunteered to do those sort of things, I always set my camera up against it and I'll press the button.
No, that's a good idea.
You know, I kind of at least feel like I'm sort of, I used to aim it. Somebody else might have actually pressed the button. Yeah. Being the mad, I used to do a lot of fishing when I was a younger lad, and I'm still rather keen. But you know, if you used to be sitting next to someone and if they picked up your rod, it was their fish. You know.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure if the same. If that someone presses your camera button, is it their photo or yours? It's the
that's
a big drama, isn't it?
So the thing was When we actually got to the spot where we were going to do this, I had taken with me a little butane torch that had a flint. And I'm sitting there trying to get this thing to fire up, and it would not fire up, and it had gas in it. So I said to the guys, look, I'll rip back to the farmhouse and grab a box of matches.
Yeah.
So I've gone back to the farmhouse, and in the meantime, David and Lee have kept... Yeah, kept on shooting, you know, star trails and whatever. So I've gone back to the farmhouse and I said, oh, can I grab a box of matches? And they're going, yeah, sure, what do you need? Or what do you need them for? And I explained the steel wool thing and they went, oh, we thought you were going to do that up here near the farmhouse. We were all really keen to see it.
Wait and see the fireworks.
So I went, oh, okay. I said, well, look, I'll go back and I'll grab the guys and we'll come back and we'll do it here. So... gone back down to the guys and said, look, they're under
were
the impression...
Were you a chauffeur or a photographer, sorry?
Yeah, exactly. So I said, look, they're under the impression that we were going to do this up at the farmhouse, so we'll have a couple of practice runs here and then we'll go back to the farmhouse and we'll put
so
it on.
So you don't look like idiots if you don't know how to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So we had a couple of practice runs and we got that happening and we then packed up all the stuff and Lee said to me, he said... You know what'll happen? He said, we'll get back to the farmhouse and they'll have all gone to bed. So, sure enough, we get back to the farmhouse. No one's around the campfire. And so we've set up again and I got Max and I said, Max, go and tell them we're about to do it. And that was the last we saw of Max.
He was fed too, didn't he?
So we ended up calling it a night around about midnight, I guess, and went back to the hotel and... You know, had a shower because we all smelled of smoke because we'd been around this campfire, and probably crawled into bed at about 12:45. And of course, my alarm went off at 4 because I had to get Tegan back out to the farm to do hair and makeup with Kylie again, ready for sunrise. And this was where, you know, software like the Photographer's Ephemeris was fantastic because I was able to find out exactly what angle the sun would rise, what time it was going to rise, which was going to be 6:34 on Sunday morning. And we'd got this old wheat truck that we were going to use as our sort of point of interest in the sunrise shoot. And we'd had that move to a spot where... the shed that it was parked behind wouldn't be casting a shadow over it as the sun rose. I wrote in my blog post, what did we do before we had software like this? You know, it's just awesome to be able to pre-plan this stuff and know that you've got your props in the right position, so
exactly.
You're going to make the most out of it, you know.
I think it was called experience.
Yes.
Occasionally using your head. Oh, if the sun comes up over there, then that should be over there. Oh, yeah. No, we're in the wrong spot.
Yeah, so...
Then you hit your assistant over the head for being in the wrong spot.
Yeah, exactly. So we did probably an hour and a half of that stuff, you know, just sort of working with the early morning light. Then we went off and had breakfast. Finished breakfast by about 9 o'clock, and I had said to the guys... Whatever we do between now and 11:30, 11:30 is our deadline. I want to start packing up because it's going to take us, you know, probably half an hour to make sure that we've got everything, you know, because it's all been a little bit haphazard on Saturday night. We're just going, oh, just chuck everything into bags and just chuck it in the cars.
Yeah,
and we'll do a proper inventory when we pack up to leave tomorrow morning or tomorrow lunchtime, you know. So I said, I want to start packing up at 11:30 so that by midday, you know, we're packed and ready to roll and ready to hit the road. So after brekkie, we headed back down to near where the wool shed was. There was some there was this other great old it was a shearer's quarters originally, and it's the most ramshackle old wooden building, and you know, all leaning on weird angles and just falling apart, and looked fantastic. And we had, because now the sun was up, it was getting a little bit warmer in the day, we had Tegan change into a sort of a Daisy Duke kind of outfit.
I've seen it.
Yep.
I saw it.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
And then we had,
do you know, her legs go all the way to the ground.
I noticed. Oh, I noticed
that? All the way to the ground.
Yes. I think the other guys noticed as well.
Right down to the bottom of her shoes. It was incredible.
So we shot through until 11:30, and you know, then we packed up and we were on the road by about 12:15. And got home to Gosford by about 7 o'clock Sunday night, absolutely wrecked, running on 3 hours of sleep. So, but you know, all of us had an absolutely fantastic weekend, and I was very happy with some of the images that I got, and I know the guys were happy with what they got, and Tegan was absolutely stoked with what she got out of it. So, yeah, I think it was a very successful weekend.
Well, I mean, the photos that I'm sure you'll be posting some up for peeps to have a look at. The photos are excellent.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, it's just, I mean, some tremendous shot. Good use of the environment, good use of the space, some different angles. I especially like the one down low where it's just like just sort of behind downwards, or butt or bum, or it's hard to say behind and not think it's just someone's back, but from lower leg.
Yeah.
Because it's all about different perspectives, and that's a great, just to think, shooting something different. So that was a terrific angle.
One of the things I made a conscious effort of on this particular weekend was to, and it was something that I've been guilty of in the past, was to make sure that I used all of my lenses. I have a tendency, or have had a tendency in the past, to get a bit too comfortable either with just my 20mm wide angle or my 135-28, which is a beautiful portrait lens. And one of the things that I found myself doing this weekend was using my 50mm 1.7, which is a lens I very, very rarely go near. And I just, you know, I was pleased with myself for getting out of my comfort zone and putting on a lens that I wouldn't normally use.
Yeah.
And just finding...
Well, like a Canon one. Why would it go on the camera?
Yeah. A bit of gaffer tape. We'll get it on there.
Exactly. So, the photographer's handy tool.
That's it. So.
Well, you made it lightly, you know, with enough gaffer tape.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it was good. It was a good weekend. I enjoyed myself. So.
What other than I'll never try and plan something like this again, what kind of lessons do you think you learned photographically out of the weekend? Was it a couple of things you got, that's I'm going to make sure I do that again and again and again?
One of the things, what I did do was I went and hired a 90cm Octobox from Dragon Image.
Yep.
With a 500-watt battery-powered head.
Yeah, I saw the lighting. I saw the end result of the lighting you were obviously using. And I thought you did a particularly good job of balancing that and making that look very natural. So, kudos for that. But I assumed it must have been a fairly big softbox to get that nice look.
And it was interesting because in some of my spare time last week, I sat down and rewatched Joe McNally's. DVD or dub 2 DVD set, The Language of Light.
Yeah. And, never seen that. Is it good?
Ah, really good. Really good. Yeah, I did his workshop when he was here last year.
Yeah.
And it sort of came in the goodies bag. And one of the things that I'd sort of, you know, I guess I'd stored it away in the back of my mind and had kind of forgotten it a little bit, was the idea that the bigger the light source, the more it will wrap around your subject, you know. So I was kind of glad that I had the bigger softbox for the weekend, because I own a 60 centimeter, and I thought, well, it'd be interesting to see what the 90 centimeter is like. And it does; it gives a beautiful light. And
you know, it's a really stupid analogy, but that's like my specialty. You know, if you take the scrim, the cover off the front of the softbox,
yeah,
you know, a 60 centimeter one won't wrap around the model as far as a 90 centimeter one will.
No.
And a 150 centimeter one will wrap even further. It might even cover it completely. You know, it's a different way. It's a totally stupid. Just thought of it just then. Different way of thinking about it. But you know,
yep.
It does wrap around more when you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what else did we learn from it?
Can I give you one thing you didn't, you probably didn't quite know, and not being experienced by twirlers, all you need to set your steel wool on fire is a 9-volt battery.
Yes.
Just keep a battery on hand if you ever want to do that. It's keeping your back, one of your pockets of your camera bag, and you've always got it ready to go.
I did remember that was an option as well, and I didn't have a 9-volt battery handy, and so I just thought, oh, stuff it, we'll use a...
And you call yourself a photographer.
Well, what else am I going to use a 9-volt battery for?
Setting steel wool on fire, of course.
I said, what else am I going to use?
Do you mean there's more? Do you need more? It's always kind of a good thing. It's actually a great survival kit to have. Is a plastic bag with steel wool in one part of your pack and a 9-volt battery in another part of your pack in a plastic bag. And if you ever get stranded somewhere you need fire, it's just steel wool and the battery, and you can light up kindling pretty easy. So
yeah, right.
It's something I've used in survival skills when I've been out in the bush and up in the middle of nowheres in Canada and Alaska and Yukon and stuff. I've always had that with me just in case.
Yeah, right.
It's a good little safety thing to have. But also makes nice photos.
I think one thing I noticed looking at the images that Lee did get of the fire, the burning steel wool thing, was I don't think we needed to expose quite as long with the fire twirling as we did.
Yeah. How long were you exposing for?
I think he was exposing around sort of the 15-20 second mark, and I, looking at it, I think we could probably have got away with around about 5 to 8 seconds. Probably would have been enough.
I usually go 6 to 8, so you're pretty much spot on.
Yeah, yep. Right.
Yep.
Interesting.
It's always hard with that stuff because you don't know how intense the light's going to be.
No, and the thing I found, having never done it before, was that the faster you twirl it, the more furiously the steel will burn.
Well, how do you get a fire to burn?
Yeah,
you
give it more oxygen,
The more oxygen you give it, the faster you spin it, the faster it's going to burn.
Yeah. So
it's all cool stuff to learn, isn't it?
It is, yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing that I guess I noticed in myself was just that I think I am slowly getting better and better at posing models.
Mm-hmm.
And just calling for, do this,
asking people to do something.
Yeah, but knowing what to ask for, and to me that's always been the biggest issue with posing a model is knowing what is it that I want, to get them to, how do I want them to pose?
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm getting better. I've certainly still got a long way to go.
Oh, it's a lifelong journey anyway, right? Yeah. Nobody's good at posing people.
Sue Bryce does a pretty damn good job.
Yeah, but she wants to be better, I guarantee you.
Probably, yeah.
Every single person, it's like everything. You always want to be better than you are. You always want to learn more and do more and see it differently and think it differently.
And I think that's an admirable goal for everybody.
Absolutely. Never beat yourself up for where you are. But just always be happy that you're always moving on. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you think, let's look at the photos, you just didn't go, they're not that good, Look at your photos from 6 months ago and see how much better than that they are,
Absolutely. I've been doing that today. I've been looking at the stuff I shot this weekend and comparing it with stuff that I shot in October and just going, this is way better than what I was shooting, as you said, just 6 months ago.
It keeps on evolving and evolving.
And the thing is, as stoked as I am with what I shot out at Trundle, there's even a couple of shots in there that I look at and I go, why didn't I do that? Why didn't I do this?
We always do that. We always do that.
Yeah.
But I like a lot of your use of angles and you know, the use of the environment was good. You know, your lines, your architectural lines were fantastic. Her lines weren't too bad either, but the architectural lines were pretty darn good. You know, it's never easy on dilapidated buildings to get architectural lines looking pleasing, because there's often weird angles for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But the structure you seem to build around a lot of the shots was very pleasing to the eye. So be happy with what you came out with for sure. I think you did great.
I am happy.
But imagine how few shots you would have got if there'd been 10 people there.
I said that to all the guys. I said, you know, in a way, I'm kind of glad that it scaled down to a smaller group, because it does. It means that I get to shoot more. I remember when we did the Ice Maidens shoot last year, where I took a bunch of photographers to the Canterbury Ice Rink in Sydney, and we did some stuff where we had softboxes set up on the ice rink, and we had these, you know, ice skating girls and guys, you know, doing pirouettes and jumps and whatnot in front of the softboxes, and, you know, we were doing that sort of stuff on the ice. And I had about, you know, 10 photographers there, and I think I fired 17 frames for the whole night, and I was happy with about 4 of them.
Flash is hard, because, you know, you got, it's one shot wonder basically, isn't it? One person gets a chance per leap, and if you're just trying to do leaping and dancing and stuff, that's a hard thing to coordinate for a group of people.
That's it. And when you're the organizer of a thing like this, you kind of feel an obligation to make sure that everyone else is getting, you know, their money's worth.
Step in, establish, get the settings, get out.
Pretty much. Yep. So
and never being able to perfect the shot is incredibly frustrating. That's my life of workshops. Really, do I get a chance to perfect the photograph? All you can do is set up the lesson, because it's the lesson. The lesson's more important than the photo always at a workshop.
Yeah.
But as the person setting it up, I want the photo often. Yeah, not always, but often, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's always frustrating. There's always that, that could have been so much better if, a nuance here, a tweak there, a slight lilt of the head here, whatever it is, would make all the difference. But you get what you get and you don't get upset.
That's it. So.
Yeah. Having said that, I did do a natural light workshop on Saturday that was astoundingly good.
Oh, yeah.
If I must say so myself, and I must, because there's no one else here to say it.
Right.
But it was astoundingly good.
Okay.
I was fortunate enough to have a character face along as a model, rather than just, you know, a flibbity-gibbet, you know, young thing.
Right.
As much as I love shooting flibbity-gibbets, I've known this guy called Peter for many a year. And he has the most astounding eyes.
Okay.
And big crotchety nose. He's got a big hooked nose. And he's very old worldy looking.
Right.
Yeah. And so I convinced him. I didn't actually, here's the funny thing, I didn't really tell him what he was in for, other than, you know, come along and help out at a workshop. You know, do a bit of modeling for me. I'll slip you a couple of bucks. And when he came up the stairs into my classroom space and saw 10 photographers lined up staring at him in an eager anticipation, a little bit of shock in the face.
It's like, what am I doing here?
He said he's had more photos taken in the 3 hours we shot him than he had in his entire life.
Oh, really?
We combined 10 people shooting.
Yeah.
And as much as I always try and tell them in the workshop, look, don't just shoot. Shoot with intent.
Yeah.
Shoot with intent of what am I trying to learn?
Yep.
Don't just stand where you are and take a photo because 3 feet this way makes all the difference or whatever. Everyone just shot like crazy. we're blessed one of those great afternoons where we had blazingly crappy sunlight, which was awesome.
Right.
But bouncing around the alleyways and off the buildings where my studio space is in Collingwood, we had some beautiful light falling off into alcoves and into nooks and crannies and carports and stuff like that. So we had we had beautiful light and a great subject.
Awesome.
And for once, I got too many good photos.
Oh, really?
Too many, way too many, like way too many, you know. which is another face that I really, you know, really enjoyed shooting. So it was kind of a lovely place to be. As I said, running the workshop, you're lucky to get three or four that you're reasonably happy with. No, this one, 30, 40, 50.
Wow.
They seem to be all winners.
Cool.
So that was pretty cool. It was great to shoot a face with some interest in it, you know, some life and some character.
Excellent.
Rather pleased. And for those who haven't, you can always check him out on my Facebook page if you want to see a couple of the shots of Peter.
Yeah, for sure. I'll definitely go and check him out.
You don't look at my page every minute of the day? You and so many others. No. But yeah, definitely, it's just great to shoot an interesting face with great light, and it was a lot of fun. And that's what photography should be.
And that's what it's about.
So, rather pleased with that.
Mm.
So what else is on the agenda? We have a question on our Facebook page.
Oh, do we? I haven't even looked at the Facebook page in the last 10 minutes.
We have the lovely Belinda Coulson.
Yeah.
I say that, not implying or saying anything by saying lovely. I mean, as a person, she's lovely. She'd like to find an app to help take and store snapshots of potential photo sites recording the locations, which makes me think she didn't listen to like three episodes ago where we mentioned it.
And an app that did exactly that, yeah.
But that's okay, Belinda. You know, I said I'm not going to let you know what the answer was on Facebook. You have to come and listen to the episode. So, Belinda, Pocket Scout is an absolutely awesome app. So it's when I use when I don't rely on my brain to remember where the place is. Pocket Scout is excellent.
Cool.
And so there's one question. And then some smart ass has said, "Yeah, how can I sound smarter on the podcast?" Oh, that's me. Oh, and I think the answer was, don't talk. Oh, there you are. There you are. Oh, you love people with a sense of humor.
Something that I saw through the week, which I thought was very simple but very clever, a guy called Michael Courier, who's obviously a photographer, he has a domain, michaelcourier.com, has set up a page called Reflect, as opposed to Reflect.
Oh.
And what he's done is come up with a very simple DIY project for how to shoot through windows without getting any reflection.
Oh, easy.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
What's your answer to it? It's probably
underexpose it.
No.
Yes. Underexpose it and light up the subject with flash. Simple. Job done.
No. He's talking about like if you're in a high rise and you're trying to shoot a the view from the high rise that you're staying in.
Oh, I see where you're coming from.
Right. So when you try and shoot out through a closed window, you get a reflection because of light coming into the building.
Right.
And so he's come up with this. When you see it, it is so obvious. You just go, why did I not think of that? All he's done is got a piece of black, relatively stiff canvas, cut a hole in the middle of it, and sort of lined it with tape around the edges, and basically uses it as a shroud between the back of the camera body and the surface of the glass.
Yeah.
And so what happens is any light coming through the window near where your lens is, up near the glass, it's simply coming through the glass and hitting this black sheet of canvas, and then it's not reflecting back onto the window from the, on the inside side of the window. I'll put a link in the show notes so you can see it. It kind of makes sense when you...
No, I can visualise it. It makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, I thought it was very clever. And
you could always turn the lights out.
No, but you see the light... but more often than not, that light is being reflected from... It's coming from outside and into the room.
Yeah.
And then bouncing off stuff in your room and then hitting the window on its way back out again, and that's where you're getting...
See, the suites I stay in, they're so big that the light, by the time the light's got the end, it can't come back. Right. It just doesn't come back.
It's like a black hole.
Oh, it's, you know, I'm on the event horizon. What can I say? No, no, it's a great idea and very, very smart bit of thinking.
It is, and he's, you know, he shows you how to...
More fun would be to have someone down on the ground with a whole bunch of flash guns lighting up the stuff around them.
Lighting an entire city.
I want to know. Look, Joe McNally set off like 1,100 flash guns at once. Yeah, I reckon we could set a Guinness record and do, I don't know, 8 million? What if Pocket Whistle give us 8 million triggers?
Now, I don't know if you saw this. Did you see the rumor of the new Sigma 18-35 f1.8? Constant,
I didn't.
Constant aperture.
Constant aperture.
1.8 from 18 to 35 mil.
Wow.
This was on fstoppers.com through the week. I don't know. I haven't followed up to see if there's any further information about this lens. But again, I'll put the link in the show notes. But this is the first time...
I've seen the photos done with it, if that's any good. But...
You have?
Yeah.
Really?
If that means anything for you, but yeah.
So well, that suggests that it's not just a rumor, then, that it really is.
No, it's a living, breathing. Well, it doesn't really breathe, but it's a living beastie.
Yeah, right.
That's on its way. When's it going to be out? I think it's June, July, something like that.
Right.
So a definite living, breathing animal.
But this is the first lens of its type, isn't it?
Yep, absolutely.
Very interesting.
Right, no other beast out there like it.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's going to be any good.
Well...
I mean, what if it's not sharp?
Well, it might...
Sharpness is evident.
Well, the thing is, we all rave about having, you know, a constant 2.8 aperture. But we also know that quite often lenses aren't at their very best, at their most wide open. So the beauty of having something that's constant 1.8 is you could shoot at 2.8, and know that you're not at... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, spot on. But, such a pathetic zoom range, though. I mean, where's the 2mm to 5,000mm one that I was promised back in 1981?
Along with your hoverboard. And your jetpack.
Yeah, I just want the... I'm waiting for the camera you can program. So these are the sort of photos I want. Go ahead and do it for me.
Yeah.
I want to have a sleep in. Go ahead then. If the sunrise is good, take the photos. If not, come back. Because they are still your photos if you program
the Android to go out and do it, yeah.
Oh, fantastic! No, but that lens is something new, and new is good. Yes, trying to push boundaries and come up with something different is the stuff we want to see in photography. Not the same old ho hum new yet another digital SLR with exactly the same stuff, but 0.3 of a megapixel more, and now it's got a bendy screen rather than just a flexible screen, and all that other fairly humdrum stuff. We want to see some genuine innovation, and that's maybe a step in the right direction. So,
well, I mean, I don't know enough about the way lenses are constructed
mostly plastic and glass.
Yeah. Thank you for
there's
that.
There's some metal in there too, I think, like some screws and stuff.
Thank you, Captain Obvious.
Well, that's what I'm here for, you know.
But obviously, you know, there has been some sort of manufacturing limitation up until this point, which has prevented anyone from creating a zoom with a constant 1.8 aperture. And whatever that limitation was has obviously now been overcome. So I guess it stands to reason that given enough time, you know, maybe 12 months, maybe, you know, 10 years from now, we will be seeing, you know, 28-70 f1.8 and eventually 70-200 1.8. That'll be exciting.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm just doing some on-the-fly research into this lens, and because it's designed for the so-called crop sensor or the APS-C size sensored cameras.
Yep.
The real goal of it being 1.8 is to give it the same effective look of minimal depth of field that a 2.8 lens would do on a 35mm sensor.
Right.
Because as you may or may not, or other people may not be aware, that the smaller the sensor, the harder it is to have that minimal depth of field.
Yes.
Appearance, the apparent look. And so this is their goal, is to try and enable those smaller sensor cameras to produce the same looking result. More so maybe than the need for the 1.8 itself. Interesting.
Very.
Very cool.
And the only other thing that I had on my list for this week,
What, you make a list?
I do.
We're supposed to pretend that we're doing this all, on the fly, just ad hoc, It's all just all out there and living on the edge.
Well, don't you think our listeners would like to think we put a little bit of love and thought into this?
Oh, I see your point. Yeah. Oh, no, it's a valid point you make. And, I've done seconds of research for this episode, Drew. What I came up with.
This last thing that I had, I know this has been around for a while. I did see it probably 12 months ago, and it was in that period where this podcast was kind of in a quasi-hibernation.
It was dead in the water, I think, too.
Yeah, something like that.
The technical term.
XRite.com have an online colour challenge. If you haven't seen this, it's basically a series of square boxes, I don't know, about 20 of them, with a fixed square at either end that are different colours, and the 20 boxes in between are all different shades that form a gradient, but they're randomised, and you have to drag them into the correct positions to get a colour gradient that runs from the fixed colour square at one end to the other fixed colour square at the other end. And it's a lot harder than you'd think.
What kind of internet nerds was this made for? So you've done it, have you, Bruce?
I had a go at it. And they do reckon that, what is it, fact, 1 out of 255 women and 1 out of 12 men have some form of colour vision deficiency.
Yes.
Take the online colour challenge based on the official FM100 hue test by XRite.
Definitely men have a large disadvantage that way.
Hmm.
So it's a lot more prevalent. Yeah, I have a strange thing with colours myself, now you mention it.
Right.
Yeah, I see green.
Yeah.
I think green. I say orange.
Right.
And I see orange. I think orange. And I say green.
Wow.
It's bizarre. Only those. Every other colour is fine.
Really?
During my driving test, was a lot of fun, I've got to tell you. You can put your hand over one eye. What colour traffic light can you see?
You're a Melbourne driver. Every light's green, isn't it?
Well, yeah, orange just means go faster.
Yeah.
So if I concentrate, I can do it. But if I just say it, it always comes out wrong.
Yeah, right.
Men and colour is a bizarre thing.
Wow.
So you did reasonably well or fairly horrendously, do you reckon?
I'm trying to remember what my score was because I can't see my score now.
Well, if you can't see it, then that's probably where half the problem was.
I think I was sort of in the middle of sort of average for guys, anyway.
Average, yeah. But, that's kind of a fun thing. Maybe we can get our listeners to have a bit of a shoot at it.
It would be interesting to see, have the guys, tell us what their results were and have the girls tell us what their results were and see whether, just out of the Shutters Inc. listenership, whether there's correlation with the numbers that XRite are quoting on their page.
Yeah. So, is it one of those things that when you move the mouse towards a colour, it changes colour? Is it one of those tricky things?
No.
Okay.
That
was going to be my excuse, that's all. I was trying to set up early, Bruce.
Right.
You've let me down. I've got a couple of things. I've got a couple of things on my my list.
Yeah.
One thing was I was watching the Australian story this week on Foxtel.
Oh, yeah.
And it's an episode from 2009, so it was an old one, but it kind of fell in with what we were talking about last week. You know, in fact, it was actually after last week's podcast when we recorded. I hung up the phone and went into the room, and it was on. And it was an episode called Proof of Life.
Okay.
It was about a Australian photojournalist who'd been kidnapped in Somalia.
Right.
And the I think it was the 18-month or something journey to get him released. And because we're talking about the perils of being a war or photojournalist in difficult locations, and some of the stuff they had to get up with. And this was harrowing. It was an amazing story, and it's actually available to watch online. So if anyone does want to, have an hour or so of quality television, give it a shot. Australian story on the ABC website.
Oh, right, so it's ABC, not SBS. You saw it on Foxtel.
It was a Foxtel, it was obviously 2009 episode, so repeat
right.
something. But it was definitely worth a watch, and I found it fascinating, being that I have an interest in all things that happen to photographers.
Yeah.
So it was just quite relevant that we'd just been talking about it and came up to that, and it's like, ooh.
Yeah, right.
So... I reckon it's definitely worth the journey. I'm not sure if people from overseas will be able to access the media. But there is a transcript available you can download.
Right.
Because if we try and access stuff from overseas, often there's limitations for country of origin and so on. But if you do have the ability to get access to it, have a gander. Yep. Now, in previous podcasts, because I've got goldfish memory, I'm not sure if we've talked about this. So in previous podcasts, because I've got goldfish memory, I'm not sure if we've talked about this. Vivid Festival. Did we talk about the Vivid Festival?
We did mention it about three or four episodes ago.
Because I've got goldfish memory. You know it's not true. Goldfish don't have two-second memories.
Oh, don't they?
You know it's not true. Goldfish don't have...
Right.
No, well, you think about it. You walk to a fish tank and they come to the surface waiting for food. When you're about to sprinkle the food in, they all come to the surface.
Yeah.
How would they know to do that if they only have a two-second memory? Really? They wouldn't know what was going to happen. Why would they come there?
Okay.
So it solved that world mystery. I've just been invited to be the MC for the weekend at the Vivid Festival for the digital playground, which will be a lot of fun.
Right. You're going to MC it.
I'm going to MC the whole shebang.
Going to drop some dope beats.
Well, not doing the music side. Yeah, I'm just doing the photo side and the digital playground in the in the passenger terminal there, whatever it's called.
Excellent.
So, but yeah, so if people are thinking of maybe there's a chance to have a little get together.
So when is that?
Well, it's I'll be there from June 1st and 2nd, but I fly in. On May the 31st, and the actual event itself goes from 24th of May through to 10th of June. That's the actual lighting festival itself.
Right.
But the digital playground, the photo session, which is Canon are involved, and Nikon are involved, and Tamron, and all these other people, and there's great speakers on all sorts of subjects, photography-based, are going to be up there. That's on June the 1st and 2nd.
Excellent. Is that a weekend?
It's a weekend.
It's a Saturday, Sunday?
Saturday, Sunday, yeah.
Fantastic.
So I fly in Friday night and fly out Sunday after my speaking duties are finished.
Right.
But I'm going to be doing a talk up there as well on how I shoot street photography.
Oh, okay.
And then how I approach people, how I move them into position where the lighting's doing what I want, and getting consistency and all that kind of stuff. So that'd be hopefully an interesting session.
You're talking about not using models, you're talking about just approaching strangers on the street.
Walking up to folk and say, hello, look at your head. That's not one of my techniques, I must admit. It's not, not the winning one anyway. Exactly. Street walking up and just, I love a character face. I love a random stranger, and I love doing 60-second portraits of people in the street that I meet.
Right.
So that's I'll be talking on that, and how to light them, how to use your gear, what kind of lenses are best, how to approach, what to do with the images once you've got them, etc. All sorts of stuff. So that'll be hopefully a moderately interesting session. And so if anyone's up in Sydney and thinking of coming along,
excellent,
come and show the love.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there'll be some people in the Sydney Photographers Meetup group on Facebook page who would be interested in hooking up and...
I'd love to maybe do a shoot.
Go for a bit of a wander or something like that.
Yeah. If that Tegan girl's available,
I'm sure I could talk her into it.
I can light her up, I guess. Yeah, we'll do some flash stuff. We'll do, see, I'd love to light a person the way they're lighting buildings.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'd love to, because they're projecting onto buildings. I'd love to project onto a person on the building. In front of a building that's being projected, it'd be kind of cool to add life to the art. So we can, even if we just project colours, if we just light them up with colours as opposed to, we can do all sorts of stuff, you know. Yeah. Maybe there's an opportunity to do some interesting stuff to our own little Vivid Festival.
Mm.
So
okay.
Maybe, if there's a chance, I'm up for it.
All right, I'll make sure I put something up on the Sydney Photographers Meetup page. And,
unless, of course, Canon or Nikon want to schmooze me and take me out and give me lots of gear, then I might have a... Yeah.
Then you just dump us.
Yeah, in a flash, in a heartbeat. Yeah, without a second. But I'd love to do that. I think it'd be a great opportunity, and maybe we can get some pretty cool shots and have some fun, I'll get to meet some new folk, which would be awesome.
Yeah. That'd be cool. We'll definitely make some time for you.
Awesome. And I was just reducing my IQ level by about 37 points before we started the recording, watching the Paparazzi TV show. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
No.
It's following the... There's
Is that what it's called? Paparazzi?
Yeah, Paparazzi, yeah. Right. And it follows this Australian... one of the world's leading paparazzi photographers, an Australian guy in England, and his business. Now he's sending out people to shoot celebrities and sports stars and all sorts of other manner of people. And it's also a repeat, this is an older episode, because just before I came to record, there was a section where there was a guy out trying to get some celebrity when the London bombings went off.
Oh, wow.
And he was right by, close enough to the bus to capture those images of injured people and devastation. And it really showed a massive difference from what their usual shooting situations they're in. Instead of a celebrity trying to knock them out and get rid of their camera, it's a very different world. And then the effect those images had on, as he was sending them back to the headquarters, who's used to seeing, someone with their top off or whatever.
Yeah.
Now they've got a bus with its top off and all this horrendous...
Carnage and mayhem.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a little bit interesting, and it was it's always good to see the other side of a photography that you probably never want to do yourself, but it's still interesting to watch.
Yeah,
probably being a voyeur as well. I saw an awesome documentary a year or so ago, and I think it's called The 14-Year-Old Paparazzi.
Okay,
it's about a kid in Los Angeles, a 14-year-old kid. Who became a paparazzi, and he would be out all night long shooting people, and it was a documentary crew following him around, and it was the guy from you shouldn't do things, this is what research is for, Bruce, you don't sort of randomly sort of think about there's a very, very popular TV show about this Entourage, there we go.
Oh, yeah.
As the lead of Entourage, it was he was doing the documentary, and he was doing all the interviewing of this kid and following him around, because he'd met him whilst this kid was trying to shoot him.
Right.
So another fascinating documentary into the life of how this kid sort of developed an interest into photography into this quite incredible career. So if anyone's interested in that sort of stuff, definitely worth a look-see as well.
It must have felt a little bit odd for paparazzi to suddenly be being followed by a video crew. It would almost like being on the other side of the fence.
And you know what? They hated it.
Yeah, right.
They absolutely hated it. They got abusive. They just wouldn't look at the cameras or wouldn't talk to them. It was fascinating. It was that was one of the great things about it. It was just their reaction. So, because there's this celebrity filming them rather than the vice versa. It was certainly interesting to watch that perspective as well. Well, that was cool. And just a little quickie, because there's another question here from the lovely Belinda. Hello, Belinda.
Yeah.
Just how do you balance the camera versus family? When photography is not your job and your family start to comment about the amount of time you spend on the camera and the laptop, her question is it time to get a new family? but how do you find a balance? And this is one of the hardest things. And I come across this all the time at workshops, is people struggling to find a balance with their passion.
Yep.
Yeah. Is this something you've ever come across with your family?
Yes and no. Like, I'm very fortunate in that I have a wife who is extraordinarily supportive of my love of photography.
Yeah.
But despite her, you know, constant assurances that she's quite happy to sit there and wait while I take a photo, I always feel like if I've got her and Max with me that I need to either shoot less or work faster.
Yeah.
I never feel comfortable taking the kind of time that I will take when I'm on my own. I love it a bit for being as supportive as she is, but yeah, I always feel that, you know, when I'm shooting.
Yeah. And yeah. What about post work? I guess, you know, it's not a big thing. You're not shooting hundreds upon hundreds of images and spending every single night in front of the computer.
Well, no.
Editing. Yeah, so no. It's a little bit of a different world. I can't remember who it was. It was a photographer I heard talking about a year or so ago, and his partner / girlfriend / wife, whatever it was, was kind of on edge a little bit about how much they were doing a bit of a traveling trip around and how much time he was spending shooting. And so he found this spot he wanted to take a photo of, and his girlfriend said, 15 minutes, and that's it, okay? You got 15 minutes. And he goes, yeah, no worries, I can do that. And he came back out after 15 minutes, and there she is in the car, absolutely fuming, just over the top, cranky, just lost the plot. He goes, what? She says, you were gone an hour and a half. He goes, no, I was only gone 15. He looked down, it's gone an hour. Oh. Gone for an hour and a half.
How?
Yeah, time can get away from you, you know? It's
yep.
But as Belinda says, look, I see this, you know, as I train people around the world, I see a lot of people getting divorced because of photography.
Really?
Especially women who are trying to make a career, trying to make a business, an ongoing business out of their photography. They are spending a lot of time on the weekends doing the shoots, because that's when people are available to do the shoots.
Yep.
So they're not seeing the family. But then they're spending every waking minute that they're not dealing with family on the computer doing the editing for them.
Yeah, right.
And that is not an uncommon thing to see people, you know, this horrendous end result. The only time that ever really changes is when she starts bringing in significant sums of money to justify it.
Then suddenly it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, the family, you're not taking away from the family so much as you are contributing to it.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting thing. So, but if you are doing it as a hobby, it's very hard that your hobbies can become. Yeah, fairly. They can sort of take over your life sometimes.
Time consuming. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you can become a little bit obsessive. And you know, one of the most wonderful people I've ever met in my life is a woman called Lynn Douglas, and she's a beautiful customer. Came to several workshops of mine.
Right.
And she sent me a letter once saying she loves coming to workshops because it normalizes her passion. Because she gets to spend a day with, you know, half a dozen, 10 other photographers who all feel the same way about photography she does.
Yep.
And all have, yeah, all don't look at her stupid because she wants to shoot as much as she wants to shoot. Where the family and friends don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, it's something people don't, and I guess that's true for probably any passions in life. I mean, I collect antique books. People look at me strange. You know, anything you've got a big passion for can become a bit consuming, and not everyone else understands that.
Yeah. No.
So I think to help Belinda or something, you've got to have, if it is becoming even a little bit of an issue, downtime. You've got to have no camera time, no computer time. You know? And I try and do this with my kids as much as possible, because my business runs 24/7.
Yep.
I'm always liable to jump on, just check the emails and maybe do a quick response. It only takes a minute or two. If you do that five times an hour, you know, the kids notice it. It's very easy. You've got to find times to say, nope, the phone's going down. No, I'm not going to pick up the camera. As cute as these kids are being right now, and they're being fantastic, I'm not going to take a photo of them.
Right. Yeah.
Because as much as I would love to capture the moment, it stops being about the moment than about me capturing the moment.
Yep.
So that would only be my advice is as best as you can, try and find moments that don't require you to take photos of it. Yeah, as awesome as they may be.
Hmm. And that can be challenging for someone who, you know, is that crazily passionate about capturing images.
Yeah. I mean, I, I, I'm the same. I took 5 photos of my daughter in the back seat of the car today just because she put my other daughter's goggles and swim hat on. Yeah, she was looking goofy. But, you know, they're nothing. They're just, but I had to shoot it because it was funny. It looked good. I wanted to email it to the, message it to my wife. And, yeah, but we're always, to my kids, they see a camera in my hand all the time or a phone in my hand all the time wanting to shoot them. Yeah. It changes their behavior.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're now performing. You know, it's maybe we have to be a little bit aware of all that as well, you know, and try and get a bounce. So I guess also, if you do put something away for just a little bit, you appreciate it that much more when you pick it up and do it again.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe it adds to your passion if you don't shoot everything or always trying to find the next thing to take a photo of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or just find a new family and shoot like crazy. Just, you know, I mean, I get it. I mean, I shoot continually. I love taking photos. It's a mad, crazy passion. Yeah. So I totally get the obsession. Yeah, and I don't understand people who, especially photographers, who say, "Well, yeah, I'm going to go on holidays and not take my camera. I'm sick of taking photos." I don't get that. You know?
No, I don't get that.
No.
It's interesting, bringing this up because there is somebody that I know who has a wife who is not like Kath and is not supportive of his efforts with his camera, you know, and he, you know, takes brilliant photos, but he's constantly getting grief from the other half. And, yeah, I'd hate to be in that position.
It's very tough. My wife, she understands it's my business, it's my life, it's what keeps food on the table and, you know, the roof over our heads. So, and because she understands what a one-man business takes out of a person to run, I mean, I only work 2 days a week, but I work all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm only seen to be working. My five-year-old tonight said, "Oh, Daddy, you only work 1 day a week." I mean, straight away, she's halved the amount of work I do. From 2 down to 1. But, yeah, realistically, I'm always working. Yeah. And my wife understands that. And I'm sure there's times she would wish it wasn't that way. But, yeah, for my case, yeah, because it is business, she understands that. It's not just a crazy passion that's not supporting the family.
The other thing I would say to Belinda too is if you're getting pushback from your partner regarding the amount of time you spend with the camera, is see if you can push them into some sort of a hobby that they love.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No, then again, maybe not, because then they'll probably want to go out and doing it. I mean, she can't go out and take photos. Careful what you ask for, you know. But Belinda may have actually wanted us to keep that name privately, so we'll just pretend we haven't said Belinda a lot, okay?
Right. Okay.
Let's hypothetically say someone called Belinda, hypothetically, a Belinda asked us a question like that, even that's not really her name.
Yeah.
That'll work, won't it? It's fooled everyone. Just between me and you and the walls. And
exactly. Exactly.
And I've been involved in a fair bit of discussion this week on a web page on Facebook about pricing, photographers and pricing. Maybe we can talk about that next week a little bit.
Oh, okay.
And, just the frustration of being constantly undercut and people not valuing the service that they're paying for. So
yep.
Could be something interesting to chat about next week.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Oh, and one extra last thing, because we did talk about McNally before.
Yeah.
I just finished rereading for the second time, can you say rereading for the second time?
No, if you've read it for the third time, yes.
Yeah, exactly, could be, yeah. His book, Sketching Light, highly recommend it. It's the best of all of his books.
Right.
Because whilst I like reading the stories of his other books, I think this one's got a lot more meat in it for people who want to learn.
Right.
So Sketching Light. It's if your Christmas is coming up, if your birthday's coming up, if your whatever's coming up.
Yep.
It's Mother's Day soon.
Yep.
There you are. There's an idea. not necessarily for you, Bruce, but for others listening.
I'm sure Kath would love a copy of Joe McNally's book.
Fantastic. But definitely worth a listen. A read, I should say.
Yeah, okay. So, cool.
It's certainly one of the better ones I've read in a while, so that's it from me.
Fantastic. Anything exciting on the horizon for the rest of your week?
Oh, a couple of workshops. you know. Oh, I'm planning. I'm busy working out the planning for Mia One and Shoot a Lot of Two.
Right.
This is our trip to New Zealand in April next. That's all my week taken up with.
Right.
Accommodation.
Have you got your passport yet?
No.
Have you actually put the paperwork in?
Well, not quite.
You know it's going to take a little bit longer for it to come back if you don't actually put it in, don't you?
What? What happened to osmosis? Now, what happened is, because I kind of made a mistake in the paperwork. Just a little. I just did a signature just a little bit out of the box. It's not allowed. So then I printed out another one and signed it correctly.
You did your signature in Arabic, didn't you?
Yeah, but then I needed this little part filled in by somebody else, and I got them to fill it all in.
Right.
And then they went off overseas the next morning, and they're the only people I know who can fill this section in.
How inconsiderate.
And I got them to fill it in on the one with the signature out of the box, not the one. So I'm just twiddling my thumbs for the comeback from overseas this weekend.
Right.
Which is highly frustrating. Highly
Right. Okay.
So, yeah, my jaunts. I mean, I was supposed to be going to LA. And LA is also at the end of May, early June. That's going to... that's been put off for the moment. So,
well, you can't do that because you're going to be in Sydney.
Well, that's why I accepted that job.
Right.
Because I realised it's a good chance if my passport's not going for another week or though. It takes 4 to 6 weeks. Yeah, diddly squat chance of being over there. So
right,
we'll have to push things back a few weeks.
Dear oh dear,
what can you do? That's life. But that's my week.
Excellent.
Yeah. But unfortunately, my wife is just retiring from her job, and it's pretty bad news for me, I'm afraid, because I have to start justifying the lack of work I do around the house. I'm not actually doing any real work, and I'm not sure how I'm going to be able to get away with the morning and afternoon naps.
Oh, okay.
Anymore. I'm thinking I've got to go to the shops for a bit, drive around the corner, put the seat back in the car and nap. But yeah, I'm working on my strategies now. So that's to the whole new world.
So why is Kat leaving a job?
She's, we've developed a series of children's books that we're going to finish writing and promote.
Okay.
And she's also doing research for a book for another woman, and then possibly ghostwriting it for her.
Oh, okay.
And and she's going to be working from home, which is joy upon joy upon joy.
Hang on. If you're doing the research for the book for somebody else and then you ghostwrite it for somebody else, how has the other person done anything?
Well, it was their idea.
Give him a credit.
I love it, don't you? It's a funny world. I might take the photos. become the Lavender book, rather. Yeah, we'll just go around and sign all the copies we can find in the bookstore. You know? Who's this random name signing these books? Anyway. Oh, so, yeah, it's my life.
Excellent. All right, mate. Well, you have a good week.
It's been a joy talking with you, as always.
Likewise. And we'll catch up with you again next Tuesday.
Absolutely.
Let's see you then.
Bye, everybody.
Shutters Inc., another audio2u.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.